I was around at my brother's home the other day. My brother still lives with my father. My father's been away on a trip overseas for about 4 weeks. And it's up to my younger brother to look after the house. And the grass is about this long. And there's stuff everywhere. And he said, I'm just leaving it right to the end. I figure I've only got to do it once. And I'll do it right at the end. Now, I don't know if you've... I'm sure none of you would have ever done that if your parents have gone away. You've kept the house clean and tidy. But there's a set time for things, isn't there? Like there's a time in which, because of the time now, I need to be doing this. I need to be doing something. Maybe you've had that horrible feeling where you've been laying on the lounge or something, and then you look at the time and go, oh, this is the time now. And up you get and you run around and you're in a big huff to try to get everything ready. I guess it's like that with assignments as well. In that when the beginning of the year starts, you're pretty laid back towards your assignments. Yeah, I've got plenty of time. But then around the middle of the term, the assignments are coming in and all of a sudden it's the time for doing it. It's the time where you've got to do it. You see, the different times that we live in affect how we behave. And Jesus, as we saw last week, has been talking about the time in which we live, something the Bible calls the last days. And we saw that throughout the first half of chapter 24, and he's talking about the last days and what was going to be happening in it. And particularly now, he's going to be explaining what it means to live in the last days. So last week we saw what the last days were like. He now moves on to say what it means to live in the time of the last days. Now, just a brief note here. As you read through this chapter, there's something that keeps coming up all the time, and it's this phrase, the Son of Man. You may have noticed it, but it's all the way through. It's probably about 10 or 12 times just in those two chapters. The Son of Man this, the Son of Man that, the Son of Man when he comes. Now, that's the way that Jesus speaks about himself. And it's a name that he takes from the book of Daniel, Daniel chapter 7. And in Daniel chapter 7, I think I've given you the reference there. It's in Daniel chapter 7, verse 13. It's all about this one who comes who is going to rule over God's kingdom. And so that's where the phrase, the Son of Man, comes. It needs a bit more study on its own, but I just flagged that's this phrase that Jesus is talking about. It comes from the book of Daniel, and it's a prophecy about this one called the Son of Man who's going to come to bring God's kingdom. And we read about it in these sections that we're looking at now. All right, so back to the main point. Jesus is saying here that this is what life is going to be like during the last days before his return. So let's look at the first part about it, verse 36. No one knows about that day, nor hour, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. So here is Jesus talking about when he comes back. And he makes quite, I think, an amazing claim for many of us. That the hour of Jesus' return, okay, is something we don't know when it is, but the angels don't know what it is. In fact, the Son doesn't know. Jesus doesn't know when that time is. That is something reserved only for the Father. It shows us something important about God, doesn't it? That Jesus and his Father are different people. They are different persons. We believe in one God, yet the different persons in that God are distinct, and the Father knows something that the Son doesn't know. That's what it's here. But he's very clear about it, isn't it? Isn't he? And in fact, throughout this section, in verse 36, he's just said, you know, no one knows that time. Or in verse 42, it says, therefore keep watch, because you do not know on what day your Lord will come. And he says it again in verse 44, and again in chapter 25, verse 13. You would think that it's pretty clear that no one knows the time when Jesus is coming back. He says it again and again and again. But let me tell you, about every 10 or 15 years, a group rise up who tell you that we have calculated when Jesus is coming back. And we know the exact date. And it just keeps coming. And it's amazing that Christians fall for it. Right? Do not fall for it. It's very clear. It may sound like a really obvious lesson, but I've been a Christian long enough now to see several of these come through, and hundreds of people get behind it and do all types of crazy things. Jesus makes it clear, no one knows. People try to guess, don't. People try to calculate it, don't. Because you can't. It hasn't been made known to us. All right, so it's going to come at a time where no one knows. And now we're actually told what the world's going to be like when he comes. What's the situation of the world going to be like? Well, let's look at verses 37 to 38. As it was in the days of Noah, so it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. For in the days before the flood, people were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage up to the day Noah entered the ark. And they knew nothing about what would happen until the flood came and took them all away. That is how it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. You see, the world's going to be at peace. People are going to be marrying, giving in marriage, doing business, all the types of things he said. Like, life will be going on nice. The world's going to be at peace. The world will be at peace. Christians won't be at peace. We saw that last week. Christians are going to be having the tribulation in the days in which we live, in which we're being tempted to leave the Lord, tempted to go in all different directions. It's not a time of peace for the church, but it is a time of peace for the world. You see, our world aims for peace, particularly a peace without God. And this is what it's going to be like when Jesus comes back. I guess it'll be just like it is now. There'll be wars over here, wars over there, but generally people will be going about their business, just living life without God. But then something's going to happen, and it's an event called the rapture. Now, this word rapture is a Latin word, apparently, and it means to take, the removal, to take away. And it's when Jesus comes, this is what happens to his people. Verse 40. Two men will be in the field. One will be taken and the other left. Two women will be grinding at a handmill. One will be taken and the other left. Now, here are people in their normal activities. But yet some of the people are Christian. And it's saying that when Jesus comes, he comes and gathers his own. And it's this image here of people who, in one sense, they're not even really expecting it in one sense, like they're not standing there waiting. They're just going about their daily business. Jesus comes and they're taken. And again, this is what Christians have called the rapture. But we need to realise that not everyone is gathered. It's a bit of a sad picture, isn't it? You're out there, the Christian is taken, the other person's left. See, not everybody is saved. And that's the point that's being made there. Not everybody is saved. One is taken, one is left. One woman at the handmill is taken, the other woman at the handmill is left. See, when Jesus comes again, it's not that everybody will just share in his glory and in his kingdom. It's only those who are Christians who will share in it. If you spend your life ignoring God, rejecting God, then when the day of Christ's kingdom comes, you lose. You're not part of it. And that's what we see happen to those people there. Now, he takes this idea a bit further with this parable of the thief. Look at verse 42. He says, "Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know on what day your Lord will come. But understand this, if the owner of the house had known at what time of night the thief was coming, he would not have, he would have kept watch and not have let his house be broken into. So also you must be ready, for the Son of Man will come at an hour when you do not expect him." Now, it's a simple enough parable, isn't it? That if you knew when a thief was coming, of course you'd be ready. Has anyone ever had anything stolen from them? I had a bike stolen once. Yeah, we've all had something stolen, I guess. I had a bicycle stolen. And I can remember just thinking back through my mind, if I just knew what time that had happened, I left it out the front of a shop and it was taken. And I thought, if I just knew when it was, I could have been there at that time. But it was no use trying to go back to the past. It couldn't be done. But of course, it's obvious. If you knew, you'd be there. Now, we don't know when Jesus is coming, but we do know that he is coming. Right? We don't know when, but we do know that he is coming. And therefore, Jesus says, you need to stay awake. You need to be ready. Now, again, he really hasn't applied this yet. He's going to apply it in a moment for us, and I'll save my applications for there. But what does it mean to stay awake? Does it mean that as Christians you are now not allowed to sleep? You must just stay awake. That's what he says, isn't it? Stay awake. Be ready. So what is it actually going to look like? to be ready. Well, I assume it doesn't mean staying awake, but these parables now that we're going to look at of the wise and foolish servant and of the ten virgins is going to explain to us how we are ready, how we stay awake. So I want to talk briefly now just about interpreting parables. Because when you start reading the Gospels, you read all these parables that Jesus says and you think, how do I understand these? And it's one of those things where you can just read through them, and you've been reading through them several times, and you've never really sat down to do the hard work to figure out what they're about. Now at Focus, one of the things we want to do is we want you particularly to learn how to read the Bible properly. And so you've got to learn how to read parables properly. So one of the things to notice with all these three parables, because there are three parables that come from now on, is that they're all about a delay in some sense. So in chapter 24, verse 44, it says, "But suppose that servant is wicked and says to himself, 'My master is staying away a long time.'" So there's the idea of a delay there. Or in 25, verse 5, it says, "The bridegroom was a long time in coming." Or in the parable of the talents, in verse 19, it says, "After a long time, the master of those servants returned." So all of these parables have got to do with a delay in time. And so just standing back and seeing the big picture, they're all about the coming of Jesus after a long period of time, which actually shows us that we're going to have to wait as Christians for Jesus to come back. We also see that these parables actually relate to each other. So after he tells the parable of the servants, he then tells the parable of the ten virgins. But look at how the parable of the ten virgins starts. It says, "At that time," that is, at the time that the previous parable finished, this next parable is going to explain what that's like. So the parables themselves are linked together. Okay, and you need to see that, because they build on each other. All right, let's have a look at them now. Verse 45. "Who then is the faithful and wise servant whom the master has put in charge of the servants in his household to give them their food at the proper time? It will be good for that servant whose master finds him doing what he is doing so when he returns. I tell you the truth, he will put him in charge of all his possessions. But suppose that servant is wicked and says to himself, 'My master is staying away a long time,' and he then begins to beat his fellow servants and to eat and drink with drunkards. The master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him, and at an hour when he is not aware of. He will cut him to pieces and assign him a place with the hypocrites, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." Let's try to understand this parable first of all. It's pretty simple. There are two servants. There is a servant who could behave in two ways, really. Either he could be a faithful servant or he could be a wicked servant. And there's a master who leaves him in charge. Now, the faithful servant is the one who goes around giving the food to the other servants. He's busy doing the master's work. That is, he goes about doing the work that he's supposed to do. He lives the way the master said. But then there's this wicked servant. He's an abusive one who abuses his fellow servants. He's a drunkard. But most important of all, he's behaving as if the master is not coming back. He said, "Oh, he's all away a long time." And so he behaves in such a way as if the guy's not coming back. You see the difference there? One guy behaves with the master in mind, coming back. The other guy behaves in a way as if the master is not coming back. And that's the difference between these two servants, and the master in the end does come back. Now, the first application of this, I think, is to the apostles themselves, because Jesus is going to lead them, and they are to feed the church, to govern the church and to start this church that Jesus is, or continue this church that Jesus is starting. And so it's an encouragement and a warning to them. But it equally applies to us. And in fact, the Apostle Paul does apply this to us and uses many of these ideas in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 and 5. But I want us to think about this for a moment. How do you live? Are you living in such a way expecting the Lord to return? Or are you living in such a way that you're really not expecting him to come back? That's the question, isn't it? Are you living in such a way that you're expecting Jesus to come back, or are you living in such a way that you're really not expecting him? I want to sharpen that up a little bit more. When Jesus comes back, will you be pleasantly surprised for him to come at any moment of your life and to come into your life? Would you say, this is a great day, the Lord's here? Or would you be embarrassed? Because when Jesus comes back, you can have two responses, can't you? You can be pleasantly surprised, or more than pleasantly surprised, but, you know, nicely surprised. This is great. I didn't know when it was, but it's fantastic that it's happened. But you can also be embarrassed. Embarrassed because you've been doing the wrong thing. And that's what I want us to think about now. I want us to think about two ways. This is the way the Apostle Paul applies this teaching in 1 Thessalonians 4. But he talks about our holiness is part of the way that we need to be prepared for the Lord's coming. Now, I want to ask you about your holiness. And I'm just going to ask a couple of areas that I just thought of. These are part of the ones that Paul brings up. Firstly, how is your speech going? When you speak to others, do you speak words of encouragement and truth, words that can be trusted? Words that if Jesus was to come back, you wouldn't have to be embarrassed. Or are you speaking crassly? Are you gossiping? Are you swearing? Do you use words that you, if Jesus was to come back there and then, you'd actually blush? So how are you living? Are you living with your mouth? Are you living expecting the Lord to come back? Or is the way you speak actually showing people that you don't actually believe Jesus is coming back at all? So we must be like the good servant and live with the Lord's coming in mind. Now, what about sexual purity? This is an issue that is often brought up in the Bible. And it's a big issue for our society, which is driven by sex in commercialism in many ways. You see, when it comes to the sexual purity of your life, how are you living? When Jesus returns, if he returns in your lifetime, will you be able to hold your head up high and say, it's great to have you here? Or is the way you're living your life now an embarrassment, and you actually don't want Jesus to come back now? It'd be embarrassing to have to face Jesus because of the way you're living. So as Christians, we need to be clear on these things. And so I need to spell this out a bit. But as Christians, in terms of our sexuality, we are to honour marriage. That is the message that goes through and through the Bible, that marriage is to be honoured. That you are not to interfere with someone else's marriage. And that the practice of sex itself starts and begins with marriage. And so our sexual activity as Christians is to begin with marriage itself. Now again, I want to ask you, how are you going in that area? It'd be difficult to be looking at pornography on the internet and have Jesus come and just say, great to see you. It wouldn't really work, would it? And I guess that's not a bad test of what are we doing. Is it suitable to think, if Jesus was to come now, could I hold my head up high? Now, you've got to be clear from the Bible what the Bible expects of us. Don't go making rules which the Bible doesn't make to bind you up. But when the Bible's clear on something, we need to say, you know, yes, this is where I'm going to live. When Jesus comes back, I'll be able to hold my head up. But now, the other way in which it applies to us, I think, is just for our service in the church. It's got to do with our holiness of life, the way we speak, the way we act, in a whole range of issues. But it's also got to do with being a faithful servant and working in God's house. Now, because you're at university, you've all got gifts and skills, which a lot of other people don't have. Gifts and skills in learning and explanation. And you need to be using those for God's church in whatever way it's going to be. It was great to hear from Chris a little bit before about a youth group that he's involved in. But we need to be involved in serving God's people in some way. I don't know what way it will be for you, but there's got to be some way in which we're doing it. Because if we're really committed to church, if we're committed to God's people and to the gospel of Jesus, then we're going to have to do something, aren't we? So there's the holiness of our life, but there's our work towards the church. So we need to be committed to Jesus. We need to have a high level of commitment to Christ as Christians. Right, the number one commitment in your life has to be to serving Jesus and to live for him. That's how it works. That's what the faithful servant is like. He's the one who goes about living the way his master wants him to. And I want to ask you, are you committed to Christ? Have you committed your life to serving him? Now, the next parable develops this idea and answers a question. And the question is, when do you need to do this by? Because I can say you've got to be committed to Christ, you've got to be living his way. And you may say, well, when? When does this have to happen by? And what we're going to do now is, I'm actually going to get you to read this parable just with the person beside you. We're going to have a go at understanding it ourselves. A little bit here, though. It talks about 10 virgins and a bridegroom. And what's on show here is a wedding. And weddings in the ancient world were a little bit different to the way we have them. At our weddings, it's mainly the groom, the man, who's in the church, and then the bride comes in the nice car and everyone comes in. But back in this day, it was actually the other way around. The woman would be there, and then the man would come, the groom, and as he would come, the bridesmaids, or in this case they're called the virgins, they would actually accompany the man in. So it's just a little bit different there. You just need to understand that to see how the parable works. But what I'd like you to do now is to read it with the person beside you. And what is the point of what Jesus is saying there? So let's do that for a few minutes. But we'll just stop there for now. Now, what's the parable of the 10 virgins about? Sorry? Being prepared. Okay, anyone else? Any?
It's
not like
being prepared now as well, but they might be thinking that, oh yeah, we're going
in tomorrow
and now it's time, but he made it for that.
Okay, so being prepared now. Okay, yep. Anyone else
want to? There are some people who sort of like with the oil and the lamps and that sort of thing, like even though they all fell asleep, there's the wise ones who actually had the oil but the other ones didn't, so they're sort of like, they all profess to have it and you can't tell which ones actually sort of have the oil, but some of them are fake and they get shown up for it,
don't they? Okay, so alright, so they all appear to be the same, but when the crunch time came you saw which ones were.
I thought it was interesting that they all sort of, even the white ones, they all grew heavy and they all fell asleep.
Yeah. That is interesting because Jesus has just been saying, stay awake, and then he gives a parable about people going to sleep. Which shows you what he means. It's good, isn't it? Because it shows you how you've got to let them all work together to get the right message and not just run off on one wrong idea. Any other ideas?
Well, like the other thing is that, if, like you said, the virgins were going to him, then it's likely that he did actually know them, but then at the end it says, I tell you the truth, I don't know you. And so it's sort of like, while he did know them because they weren't there at the hour or whatever, he sort of, I don't know, said much he didn't know them.
Yeah, well, they're terrible words, aren't they? Here they are, you've come for this big wedding. And then Jesus, who it is, he says, go away, I did not know you. Oh, sorry, let me get this right. I tell you the truth, I don't know you. They're terrible words. You're out there waiting for Christ, and then you're told, no, I'm told by him I don't know you. Yeah, all right. Now, I think the parable is about being prepared, and I think the way Ben developed it a bit more, really gets to the point of it, because while it is about being prepared, it's more than this. It's about being prepared at the right time. Because the wise virgins took along the extra oil, that is, they were prepared for the right time. And when the time came, off they went. The other virgins also, see, that they went to get prepared later on. They went there, they ran out of oil, and then they just said, we'll go get prepared now and then come back later. But you can't do that. So you have to be prepared at the right time, and when the time came, you couldn't get prepared. I mean, that's what happens to them, isn't it? You've got two lots, one group are on time, the other time are late. I think it's like studying medicine. I know we've got a few medical students here, and you know what it's about. The rest of us who haven't studied medicine just have this huge awe and respect and just think that it's the most impossible course in the world. But I just want you to imagine if you're studying medicine and you hadn't gone to any lectures for the whole term, you haven't gone to any lectures, you haven't gone to any laboratories, you haven't read any of the textbooks, and then you go to uni one day and you're told, oh, it's actually exam day today. Right? The exam's going to, like, the exam's starting now, you've got to go on and do it now. You can't actually at that point say, I'm going to go away and just study. Can you? Because it's too late. Now, you could go away and study, but you can't, because the time is that you had to have done it beforehand. And I think that this is the main thrust of this parable, that he's saying you have to get ready now. Don't think that you can put it off. Don't think that you can just say, well, when Jesus comes back, then I'll sort everything out, or later on I'll sort it out. Now is the time to repent. You have to do it now. Don't put it off and say, I'll do it later. It's got to be done now. Because later on, you may not have later on. I've seen this with some people. They'll say to me, well, I actually think that Christianity is true, but I don't want to do it now. I'll do it later on in my life. I'll do it maybe just before I'm about to die. Right. Now, that is the classic thing. I can put it off later. And I don't know any of them who have actually successfully done that, because after spending so many years of hardening their heart to the gospel, you then just can't say, well, I'll soften my heart to God now. It doesn't actually work like that. You spend your life hardening your heart to God, you'll most likely stay that way. Maybe not, but you generally do. See, the parable is that you've got to get ready at the right time. And I want to say, now is the time to repent. Now is the time to live the holy life. You have to be prepared and living the Christian life now. Don't put it off, because when Jesus comes, that's it. There is no more time. The preparation you've done is the preparation that's only the only preparation allowed to be done. And so now is the time for us to be committed in service to Jesus and his church. Now's the time to be living the holy life. And now's the time to be repenting from our sins. Don't put it off. And if you are being slack, you may well just be in a low point of your Christian life. And we can all go through those times, can't we? We can all go through low points. Well, if you are, come before God and ask God to refresh you. If there's a sin that you're bound in, confess it to somebody. Pray about it. Keep praying about that sin and pleading with God to take it away from you so that you can be prepared, so that you don't need to be ashamed. But we need to be like the wise virgins and to be prepared at the right time and not putting off our preparation for another day. Because as Jesus finishes that up by saying, with some horrible words, and I'll leave this warning for us to finish on. He says, later on the others also came. Sir, sir, they said, open the door for us. But he replied to them, I tell you the truth, I don't know you. Therefore, keep watch, because you don't know the day or the hour.